It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny, and this is indeed my show. And today, we're taking a break from the G1 Climax tournament, which is reaching its climax, and we will have to get to the final next week. But today, I would like to go back and have a look at the world of sports wrestling. Now, back in the day, there used to be this show called The Squash that I was a presenter of, and so was my guest, Mr. Gavin Duenas. How are you, sir?
Hello, very good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you very much. Now, back in the day, me and Gavin did a review, well, kind of a preview of what we hoped World of Sport Wrestling would be. So I thought it was only fair to invite Gavin back to the Truepenny Show so we could discuss it again, now that we've got a couple of episodes in. And obviously, we've been a bit busy with the G1 and trying to cover everything we can there. So this one's going to be slightly different to what we've been doing recently, but it's generally, you know, a review and a chat about the show and what it's done for British wrestling scene and how it's showcased people and what we think of the production. So, Gavin, what were your overall thoughts, first of all, when you heard that World of Sport was coming back?
It was a pleasant surprise because obviously there was a bit of a false start, wasn't there, about a year ago when it looked like they were coming back with a series. And then apparently due to WWE sort of raiding the UK wrestling scene and signing certain people to exclusive contracts, I believe that was the reason it kind of got... Is that the reason?
Well, there was also some production issues because, of course, Impact Wrestling were involved in being the production at that particular point, and it was during Jeff Jarrett's, how can we put this, need for some space, so it didn't really get off the ground.
Well, I was very glad when I heard it was coming back. You know, I had... You know, they had the New Year's Eve special the year before last now. And, yeah, that was, I think that was what we first talked about, wasn't it, when we discussed it on Squash. And I thought it was good and bad on that show. But I thought that because it was a one-off show, there were certain things that I felt they may have felt that they had to do on that show, which they didn't need to in this because it's a 10-part series. So they can tell a kind of a longer story. And I have to say that my impression on the first couple of episodes is that there isn't much of a longer story being told, and certainly not a particularly coherent or accessible one.
Well, I mean, I think looking at the first episode, they had a lot of stuff to do in an hour. You know, you look at the mainstream wrestling shows that the British audience is used to, so Impact Wrestling and WWE. Obviously, Monday Night Raw is 3 hours long. You've got plenty of space there to tell a story. Impact Wrestling is 2 hours long. You can keep a lot of people happy. Doing it in 45 minutes... when you take ad breaks out, that makes it a bit harder. And they may have bitten off a bit more than they can chew with that. I can understand where you're coming from with that.
I feel like I need to explain my angle that I look at this from. You know, I've drifted away from watching wrestling the last 6 months or so. But my obsession for quite a long time, you know, up until that point, was that I felt that wrestling was becoming more and more inaccessible generally. It's, you know, and you know, I don't watch a lot of the wrestling that you watch. So, I'm not speaking about the whole industry in general, but certainly speaking of what I am familiar with, which is particularly WWE, but also, you know, Impact Wrestling as well. And to some extent, Ring of Honor. I felt that there was it was becoming almost like this, you know, there was this existing, I'd say surprisingly large kind of hardcore audience. Probably a couple of million worldwide who got it, who understood exactly, you know, all of the quirks and all of the tropes and had come to expect a certain thing. And it was almost like all of these people were aboard the ship, but now it had left the port and no one else could board the ship because to a new pair of eyes, I think a lot of WWE, a lot of what they do now and a lot of what you see elsewhere doesn't make sense. You know, I think there's not that, there isn't that kind of simplicity and that structure and that foundation. And you know, I think a lot of things happen where I sort of feel like you you could have dragged that, you know, you could have got more out of that. You know, you could, it's a lot of booking that we see in these promotions isn't economical. You know, a lot of things are thrown out there which could have been built up, could have been a big deal, you know, and there are lots of things that happen which I just feel like are bad habits that the industry has developed. And this for me, you know, of that maybe 2 million, whatever it is, that hardcore wrestling audience, you know, maybe 200,000 or 300,000 of those live in the UK. This World of Sports show ideally should be going out to 5 or 10 times that number.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of the audience of that show are not familiar with wrestling's bad habits. And so there are certain things they just don't need to do. You know, I haven't got anything against, you know, I'd take as an example just having a five-way match on the first show. You know, I mean, I haven't got, and a three-way, in fact.
Yeah.
I mean, a ladder match on the second show and a three-way match on that show. You know, I haven't got a problem with special matches taking place like that, but I think they should be built up so that there's a reason that they happen. You know, I don't mean they should just happen and no one thinks much of it. You know, I don't think there should be, you know, Wade Barrett kind of stacking the deck against a champion and then nothing, the commentators aren't appalled by what he's saying and really challenging him on it, you know. And they only really touched on that very briefly, I felt. And I think that even with this show, there was that assumption that everyone watching knows what happens in wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that actually this was a wonderful opportunity to reinvent what wrestling is for, if not an entirely new audience, but an audience that is largely made up of casual mainstream viewers who aren't familiar, you know, who can wait 6 or 7 episodes to see a dream match between British Bulldog Jr. and Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
They, you know, giving it to them on that first show, it is a dream match, you know, they're both great wrestlers, but it means nothing to someone who's never seen either of them before because they don't normally watch wrestling. And sorry, I'll stop my ramble now.
I mean, I think there is precedence of, like, doing it this way. I mean, if you look at the very first Monday Nitro, Kevin Sullivan was booking the undercard for that, and he put Jushin Thunder Liger versus Brian Pillman as the opening match because he knew he'd grab hardcore fans with it. And I think there was an element of that in the booking of Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Will Ospreay, certainly. And I agree with you to an extent.
You would hope, though, that... Sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
I'm talking way too much. but you would hope that the, you know, the hardcore wrestling audience, if it's a good enough show, is going to watch it. You know, that they don't need... And I mean, I don't know... I didn't see any advertising for the show, so I don't know how well it was advertised. I don't know how much of a big deal they made of it on social media or in the wrestling press. But, you know, I wasn't aware that match was going to happen until I saw it. You know, it wasn't like something that I'd... So as a, you know, I suppose as someone who was part of that hardcore wrestling audience, I didn't even know that match was happening until it began in front of me.
Yeah, I think I can agree with you there. I mean, I kind of knew it was going to happen because of, like, I'd seen spoilers on tapings and stuff a little bit. I don't tend to read spoilers, but just stuff I caught by accident. And they did do a good job of promoting the show in general. But again, as you said, it's in general. They weren't specifically promoting specific wrestlers. Obviously, you've got Grado coming in as your top guy, and then they did put some onus on him. But you're right, if you were trying to grab an audience, saying Will Ospreay versus Davey Boy Smith Jr., a match you wouldn't get in Japan because obviously Harry Smith is a heavyweight and Will is a junior, and also, you know, they don't mix they mix in tag matches a bit. I'm sure they probably wrestled each other. In fact, I probably watched them wrestle each other, to be honest. However, this is a different thing. You know, the Davey Boy Smith Jr. you see in the UK is a completely different animal to the murder, slaughter, ag heel that he is in Japan. So it's a different thing, and I can see where you're coming from, where they could have put some onus on that to grab the hardcore audience. I understand what you're saying with the shortened up tropes. You know, I think Stu Bennett's perfectly fine as an executive figure and stuff, but I think you need to eke that out, his character. I mean, if you look at Gary Oquedo in Lucha Underground, that character didn't start off as evil. You know, he was evil, but it was a long drawn out affair as to the story that he had, what pressure he put on the wrestlers and why he put the pressure on the wrestlers. And his whole driving force was, we're going to make money. And that was his deal. So there isn't really anything there with Stu Bennett to get his teeth into to tell a longer form story. All you know is he's a bad guy and go. You know, that's something they could have worked out a bit better, I think.
I thought that his character, and this is bizarre because I find it hard to believe anyone with wrestling knowledge would take this direction, but I always felt like it was based on Triple H and Stephanie McMahon in WWE, in the sense that it was completely contradictory. You know, he was, you know, on one hand he was clearly supposed to be a heel. On the other hand, you know, he's talking about he's talking about how he's giving an opportunity to youngsters and how he's given Lionheart the opportunity to be there after his serious injury, and you know, and there were sort of three or four moments where it was obvious that their aim was that he was going to be a heel.
Yeah.
And yet actually the majority of the things he said weren't that heelish. And I think that kind of, you know, you could kind of say, well, you know, you're shades of grey, you know, that you don't want those kind of black and white babyface and heel characters and that kind of thing. But what was missing was any consistency to his character, I felt. And, you know, I just think that it felt to me very much like WWE Lite in a lot of ways. You know, he was one of the ways, but just, you know, a lot of it. And I don't think that's how you... Don't think that's how you establish yourself as a newcomer in the market. But actually, let's not forget they've been given a gigantic opportunity. You know, they're on one of the two main terrestrial channels on British TV. You know, there is a big audience there. You know, when you look at shows that are on Saturday evenings, like, you know, this is an earlier slot, but you know, you look at things like X Factor that is on slightly later on a Saturday evening that, you know, it gets big numbers. You know, this is a show that if it gets some momentum going and catches on with the casual audience, could quite easily post bigger viewership numbers than any wrestling show in anywhere in North America posts. Yeah. And, you know, and that would be, that's entirely realistic. You know, that's not an overly ambitious target, you know. And I think that by trying to just, by looking like you're trying to be like WWE, but being, you know, a smaller arena and everything's just that little bit less special, you know, the ramp to the ring, you know, we've talked about this before, but you know, the ramp to the ring and the industrial look of the set, and you know, there's so many things where I just feel like you need to reinvent it and have something that is entirely your own identity. And it felt to me like they were trying to imitate a lot of things that WWE does, which I don't think has helped the wrestling industry.
I liked the setup and I liked the way it was presented because it does look professional. It does kind of match in with that ITV look of what a studio is supposed to look like with bright lights. And one of the reasons why I hate watching ITV is because everything's bright lights, explosions and massive video screens. And it did look like Britain's Got Talent wrestling. And I kind of, that sounds really bad, but I like it because at least it's following the theme of what World of Sport and ITV do. If you see what I mean, it's ITV to me is kind of like the variety show channel. You know, it's like, as far as their entertainment side of things is concerned, Saturday night should be like going to the variety show in the 19th century. You will see a bunch of stuff and you'll like some of the stuff and you won't like some of the stuff, but there'll be a bunch of stuff. And that's kind of what ITV's bag is. And there's nothing wrong with that. And it's been clearly very successful for them. But it did kind of fit into what the ITV theme is, I think, personally. So I can agree with you to an extent, but I disagree on the fact that there has got to be a familiarity to the show as well for any audience, and there's got to be familiarity to the way that they present it, and I think it fitted in that sense. I do agree that they may have overcooked the pudding a little bit as far as like the booking of matches is concerned and trying to fit too much character narrative into 45 minutes when they could have taken their time a lot better with it.
Well, I think it's interesting actually about the character narrative, because you know, I think the key to success in any kind of storytelling is taking viewers on that journey, and even, you know, not just in fiction, but even in things like X Factor, you know, and Love Island and these kind of shows, you know, there's that. The foundation it's built on is that the audience relates to the characters. I didn't find any of the characters on World of Sport relatable. You know, I kind of felt like I got to know Stu Bennett a little bit, but I also, like, what I got to know about him was that he contradicts himself all the time and doesn't have any consistency. But everyone else, I kind of felt like there wasn't enough of that introducing the characters. And you know, again, I go back to Will Ospreay. I feel like Will Ospreay should have been highlighted as this massive new star on British TV. You know, who does these incredibly athletic moves, and you know, and again, I go back to that casual viewer who doesn't regularly watch wrestling. They see Will Ospreay and it's the most incredible athletic, graceful thing they've ever seen in their life, you know, and you build him up by having him go out there and win two or three matches. You know, so he's not only cool and gymnastic and athletic and does these dazzling moves, but he's a winner.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like he does all this stuff and then he just loses anyway. You know, and in the meantime, you have interview packages of him, you have video packages of him, you know, and you build him up more and more so that people are, you tell people what his goals are, and people get invested in his journey, you know, and I think that's something that, you know, you do throughout the show. You know, I don't think they gave us anything of Grado to invest in his journey or in Rampage, you know, or you can kind of, I feel like you can go throughout the show and there's no one. From the first two episodes, there was no one where I sort of feel like I have a real, you know, I feel like I want to keep watching this series to see where this wrestler's path goes.
I think that's something that, like, the successful companies in the UK have done really well. If you look at the character that Rampage Brown is in Progress, he's a big lad from Leeds who hits people really hard. And you don't really need much more than that for... And hey, look, he's massively popular. I was in Sheffield the night he made his comeback to Progress, and it deafened me. It was that loud, because Yorkshire lad in Sheffield, yeah. You know, and it's not hard to do that stuff. So I can agree with you there, certainly. So shall we have a look at the first night and see, go match by match and give it a bit of a review and what we thought of people. So the opening thing was a segment with Grado coming back as champion, and we kind of got the layout of what Stu Bennett was going to do. And then there was going to be an elimination match to face Grado for the WOS Championship. It is something that's kind of grating on me. It's no longer World of Sport, it's WOS, because initials are the way forward again, apparently. And it's like, hang on, no wrestling company's had initials for ages. So I kind of missed World of Sport. We could have stuck with that. That'd be all right.
And yeah, WOS, World of Sport would have been
better. WOS doesn't really roll off the tongue, but, you know, I'm not trying to be negative because I like the show a lot, but it is just like there's
little
bits.
Well, that's my role. I kind of, you've got to stay positive because I'm going to criticize a lot of this. I have to say, you know, warning to the listeners.
So yeah, so Grado comes out, cuts a promo, and you know, good promo from Grado. Grado is one of the best promo guys in the country, you know, and you know, how they've built him as a star in ICW is certainly a textbook example of how you get someone over. I mean, he was at the SECC last week, made his comeback to ICW, was announced by Jeff Jarrett, who's their current commissioner, and the place absolutely erupted. And you can do that with Grado. He's a perfectly capable guy to do that with. And, you know, he was well over with this particular audience, who were pretty much a smarky hardcore wrestling audience, judging by the number of Bullet Club t-shirts in the crowd. But, yeah, it was good. So this opening match was Justin Sizem, Shash Samuels, Rampage, Adam Maxted, and Crater. And they had a fairly reasonable five-way match. But again, why have a five-way match? When you're trying to educate an audience, a good example was from earlier this year. I didn't see it, but from the Greatest Royal Rumble of all, I think it was John Cena and Triple H had a match, which was essentially, here's how a wrestling match works, because you've never seen wrestling before, so we need to explain how wrestling works. That's the kind of thing I was looking for here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. You know, it was just sort of, it was just said like it was nothing to announce a five-way match. And, you know, and I also think people understand tournaments, so you know, you could have just cut one of those five wrestlers from it and just said, we're going to have two semi-final matches and then we're going to have a final, and then it's the big reveal. Stu Bennett could have said, actually, they're not going to have a final, they're both going to wrestle against you, Grado, because I don't want you as my champion, you know. And then there's logic, and you know, it explains why it's a triple threat match, and then the commentators can get across, you know, he's putting Grado in twice as much jeopardy because he hates him, and you know, all of these things, and it just makes more sense than saying, we're going to have a five-way match, and here they all are standing at the top of the ramp. I do want to comment on the kind of opening of the show. I thought the opening credits were fine, but I was really hoping they would come, that they would keep the music, even if it was a sort of modern version of the World of Sport music, you know, the kind of the iconic World of Sport theme. And I think they could have come up with something a bit more eye-catching production-wise that sort of merged past and present, you know, where it showed you highlights of you know, Big Daddy and Ken and Nagasaki and Mick McManus, and sort of merged them in with highlights of the current wrestlers to sort of, you know, just show that this is a company that does have that rich, long history.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a brand new company that's come out of nowhere. But, you know, the production values, you know, as you said, it was entirely professional looking. You know, there was nothing wrong at all with the way it looked. You know, as far as production, you know, there were certain things I wasn't keen on about the set itself, but the production was absolutely fine. I don't and this might seem, I don't want this to sound like a narrow-minded, you know, little England comment, right?
But you're gonna have a go, right?
I don't think it benefits having an American accent on the show. I think you just want it to be a show that is very distinctly British, and I don't think So Cavall is a particularly good commentator. So it's not like she adds a massive amount.
How
but even if she did,
you?
I kind of feel like, you know, it's not like she's got this huge mainstream recognition. You know, I just feel like just make it a really British show. You know, you don't need an American. People aren't going to stop watching because there's not an American on the show, you know. And you know, I would say that of, you know, any kind of, I don't think it should have any Japanese people on the show. You know what I mean? It's not because it's an American accent. It's not that specifically. It's just that you kind of, what it comes across to me as, and what I think it comes across as to as a casual viewer is, you know, we are trying to be like WWE. It's another example where I just feel like it seems like they're trying a bit too hard.
Brexit Duenas.
Yeah, exactly. That's my new name.
Brexit wrestling.
Grado, yeah, I think Grado's fine. I think there's a bit too much frivolity, but I think he, you know, he's got charisma. He's good on the mic, and so, you know, I don't have a problem with Grado. It would have been better if he'd not been a sort of a lower card act in TNA, but because I think so few of that potential audience you've got has seen TNA, it doesn't matter too much. You know,
so few of anyone have watched TNA.
I don't mean Grado's. Yeah, you know, I don't mean Grado's going to. If World of Sport was done right, you know, as in the way I think it should be done, and, you know, and it really took off as a mainstream hit, I don't think it would be a problem that Grado had been an undercard act in TNA.
No.
The five-way, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, we've just had a World Cup. And some people don't like football, but no one doesn't like football because every match is 11 against 11 and goes for 90 minutes. You know, it's like, I just don't feel it. I feel it detracts. It doesn't add, you know. I think one-on-one wrestling matches or two-on-two, you know, or as a very, very rare occasion, multiple people, that's fine. But generally, I just think, you know, if you haven't got enough confidence in the quality of your product, just to put one wrestler against another wrestler, and one of them's the antagonist and the other one's a protagonist. And, you know, I don't know really what they were trying to achieve having five of them. And it was so messy. The booking of it was just really messy. And, you know, I didn't really understand the finish. You know, it just was, it sort of, you know, it presumably Bennett was doing something he shouldn't have done, but I couldn't even tell if he was right in what he was saying to the ref. You know, I couldn't tell if the referee had messed up or, you know,
no, I think it was
kayfabe terms.
Yeah, no, it was correct. That was the way they were going. But again, I agree with you. It is just like, I'm not a big fan of multi-man matches. And I think this was all right for where it was. It was a good five-way. The one thing we're not talking about is the fact that the quality of the wrestling hasn't come into question. The wrestling was always going to be good because you could have got 20 guys from anywhere in the UK and done this show to a similar standard because they're all really good. But it is just like, also, you have to give the canvas for the wrestlers to do the job with.
I think that the what it reminds me of in some ways is, you know, probably on a smaller scale, but, you know, when the WWF went national in the mid-80s, you know, they were able to import all of these acts who had polished their act on the territorial scene for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, you know. So they got Roddy Piper already as a perfectly rounded performer, you know, and Hogan and Savage and, you know, a lot of the big stars they brought in from elsewhere, they were already just ready to go, you know. Just put them in that, just give them a chance, put them out on the screen or in the ring, and they will keep that audience, you know, because they're really good at what they do. And I think this is similar in this way for the British wrestlers on this show. I feel like, you know, these wrestlers are all good enough that, you know, they just needed that platform, and they need to be given that foundation to thrive in. And yeah, a five-way match just doesn't do that. And yeah, they're going to be good. The matches are going to be good because there are loads of good wrestlers. You know, that's the modern wrestling industry. One thing it is not lacking is quality in-ring product.
No, definitely not. Now, speaking of which, we should go to the next match, which is Davey Boy Smith Jr. defeating Will Ospreay.
Hang on a minute. Who the hell's Crater?
Oh, Crater. He's from Future Shot Wrestling in Manchester.
Oh, right.
Don't know much more about him because he is a genuine masked man I don't know much about.
I thought he was a bit Bush League, I have to say. I kind of didn't think he looked particularly like a sort of... mainstream wrestling star in my eyes. I don't like to criticize individuals in that way, but I just thought there was something a bit Bush League about it. You know, just a big man in a mask who I couldn't understand if he was a babyface or a heel, or quite, you know, what I was supposed to make of him.
Yeah, I mean, he does wrestle for Future Shock. I only found out about it because I'm doing some research for an article I'm writing for FSN this week. So I was looking through some Future Shock stuff, and I went, "Oh, he wrestled for them. That's where he came from." So yeah, so he's a Future Shock guy. Good promotion in Manchester.
I have to say that you know, all five of the wrestlers really in that match. You know, it was kind of like none of the characters had been established. I didn't know who was a babyface and who was a heel, and it was just too much going on at once. And I think you could have, you know, you've got 10 episodes. Okay, you've only got 45 minutes to fill, you know, in each of those 10 episodes. But that's still a lot of time to tell a story. Especially if it's a story about who is becoming the number one contender to being your world champion.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to wrestle for your world championship. Sorry, the second match. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm about 5 minutes behind you in my analysis. You know, it was a good match. You know, they're both really good wrestlers. They had a really good match. My problem, like I said, was just to do with, you know, it is a dream match, but own it as your own dream match rather than just telling people it's a dream match. You know, I believe the whole thing was filmed over about 3 days, so there's no reason they couldn't have had them featured throughout the series, and, you know, and build up, by all means, build up to in episode 8, 9, or 10. These two wrestling against each other, and then we know it's a dream match because we've seen those two dominate all the matches they've been in, and we can't imagine either of them losing, and we know the characters, we know who they are, and we can relate to them, you know, and we have a reason why we want to cheer one over the other.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think it's a missed opportunity, this match. You know, I think I haven't got a problem with, you know, obviously with these two being on the roster and with them having a match between these two, but I just think that they could have got so much more juice out of it in front of an audience that doesn't expect two big stars just to be thrown out in front of them in a match with no context. You know, this is an audience that can, where they can be a bit patient with their storytelling, and they can drag it out over 4 or 5 weeks, because, you know, hopefully the vast majority of his audience isn't familiar with those WWE style tropes.
No, true. I mean, I'm trying to think like what this match would look like in Japan, and it would involve a lot of chairs and brawling outside the ring, and Harry like trying to kill Will Ospreay for about 5 minutes, and then it would go back in the ring, and then it'd be a wrestling match for a bit. So, you know, it's a very different kind of approach. Harry actually won the Billy Robinson Memorial Grappling Contest. I can't remember where it was. I think it was in Pennsylvania. Early this year, because he wasn't in the G1 and wanted something to do. So he just went and entered a grappling contest and won it because he's that good. A shoot grappling contest, by the way, an actual, like, you know, proper martial arts contest. So yeah, Harry and Josh Barnett, who's the New Japan commentator for Access TV, was actually his corner man for it as well, which I just thought was brilliant.
It's amazing, just, you know, when you think back to his... You know, when he kind of first came along in WWE and just had nothing about him whatsoever, I thought, and was very bland in every way, you know, in the ring and as a personality. And he just, you know, the progress that he has made in the last 10 years or whatever it's been since he left that company, it's just been, you know, incredible.
Because he's doing the things he want to do. You know, he's like Killer Elite Squad. Him and Lance Archer are a killer tag team in New Japan Pro Wrestling. The matches they had with Guerrillas of Destiny last year were absolutely awesome. But Gedo the Booker thinks completely differently. He's like, right, here's what I want to do. How do you want to do it? As opposed to, here's what you're doing, which is a completely different thing. You know, so
yeah.
People are enjoying themselves, which is one of the reasons why the people enjoy watching the product, because the people who are doing it are clearly having a ton of fun doing it. Anyway, we'll move on to the next match, which was a World of Sports Tag Team Championship tournament bout. The first World of Sports Tag Team Championship, There was a World of Sports Tag Team Championship back in the 1980s, and it was a tournament that they ran over 2 weeks of shows, and the winners were Skull Murphy of Portsmouth and Dave Fit Finlay, current WWE producer and father of Dave Fitlay the IV, who's the heavyweight in New Japan Pro Wrestling. There you go. Back in the day, I watched that.
I saw Skull Murphy once headlining a show in the Regal Theatre in Minehead against Giant Haystacks.
There you go. Skull turned face a little bit in the end of his career because he'd done everything he could as a heel. Anyway, Kip Sabian and Easton Rees defeated Martin Kirby and Joe Hendry in a match after Joe Hendry was turned on by Martin Kirby. This is another case of too much story going into too short a period of time, but a perfectly good and watchable match, and I was really impressed with Kip Sabian and Joe Hendry, and Easton Rees, to be fair. Martin Kirby's an old standing pro who does a very good job.
I thought this was a really good match, certainly the best match of the show. Mm. In fact, I'd say best match of the first two shows. I thought it was, yeah, just again, probably, if anything, they were let down by the storytelling, you know, kind of what you've sort of insinuated that, I think. You know, yeah. It was good to see a promo before the match for the heels to establish themselves. You know, it was you know, basic wrestling 101, but, you know, that's not a bad thing. Why was it a mystery who they were facing, and why do the tournament brackets just not have the names of who's in the tournament? Like, when I watched the FA Cup, I know which teams are playing each other, and I can anticipate those matches. But in this one, why does Stu Bennett not know? He's meant to be the boss.
Yeah.
Why does he not know who's wrestling each other?
That's the bit I don't like about it either. It's like, give us something for next week. It's very immediate. I can understand with a modern audience, you want to be short and snappy and keep it to the point. But equally, there's nothing to hang you there for next week. There's nothing to keep you going to next week.
Yeah, I didn't feel it made any sense, and it's the way it came across to me, and I know this wasn't the case, but if I didn't know any better, I would think they were booking this week to week, and they just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, but they do know, because obviously, you know, it's a 3-day taping, and they had it all worked out, so they knew who was going to be in this. So why is there not a promo on this show of you know, just a 30-second package saying this is who's in the tag team tournament next week? You know, like, just tell us, at least get us familiar with the names.
Yeah.
You know, if nothing else, you know, like the fact that if you just have an idea of the names of these people, you know, your imagination can run wild a bit. You know, Skull Murphy, who we just spoke about, when I used to watch wrestling on TV as a kid, you know, the World of Sport, he was my favorite just because I liked his name.
Yeah.
You know, so a name goes a long way,
yeah.
You know, because it just fires the imagination that bit. But yeah, having a kind of, you know, and it was they have mystery partners. That doesn't really work when, you know, to the majority of the viewers, they don't know who those mystery opponents, sorry. You know, the majority of viewers don't know who they are. They don't know who Hendry and Kirby are. And I mean, I'm not massively familiar with them, but I can't remember which commentator said at the end after Kirby had turned on Hendry, they sort of said, well, like, he shouldn't have trusted him anyway because Martin Kirby's a, you know, a scumbag or whatever whatever it was they said.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought, so what? He was a heel anyway going into this. So why was Joe Hendry teaming with him?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's a standard of storytelling that wrestling should hold itself to.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think WWE and its imitators in North America have you know, long ago stopped holding themselves to that standard. But, you know, just give us a reason why stuff happens, you know, and make things make sense. And yeah, it was a really good match. I really enjoyed the match, but I just felt that it was let down by the framework around it.
Yeah, I mean, as well, like, Joe Hendry's, like, you know, Commonwealth Games standard amateur wrestler. He's a proper athlete. You know, he's done things that are really impressive. And I kind of think I would have given him a bigger role than... I mean, he does in the next week's episode. He's obviously on a crack at Rampage Brown. But for me, it's like, you know, give that guy. He really can get himself over. He gets nothing but great reviews from anyone who watches him. And his ability to get himself over is, you know, paramount. So I'd kind of let him go a bit if I was them. But their choice, and I can see where they're going with what they're trying to do.
The one thing I'd say about him, I think he has, you know, he definitely has something about him. He's, you know, he's absolutely got, you know, appearance wise and in ring wise, he's definitely got enough to justify, you know, being on a mainstream wrestling show like that. But I'm not a big fan of the entrance gimmick. I kind of think it's that sort of ironic wrestling humor that, again, is kind of the, you know, the hardcore audience seems to enjoy that kind of thing, but I don't think it really resonates, especially as a baby face. I think it's kind of, you know, it's quite heelish and a bit too sort of ironic and insider that. And I don't know that a mainstream audience would particularly relate to him, and certainly, you know, would get behind him.
Works too well for ICW, but not for anything else.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think that's, you know, I do think that, you know, kind of going back to my point at the start, you know, I think there's a massive difference between trying to have a show that is a mainstream hit and resonates with that casual audience that doesn't know all of this other stuff. And, you know, you can be a massive favorite of the hardcore fans, and you know, you can be a draw amongst hardcore fans, but it doesn't actually necessarily always mean that you're going to translate exactly to that wider audience.
Okay, well, the main event for this show was Rampage Brown defeating Grado and Justin Seizman in a three-way match for the World of Sports Championship, which was a perfectly serviceable match for what it was, considering the people involved. I don't mean to downgrade Grado, because I think Grado's awesome, but it wasn't going to be a technical classic. It was going to be a storytelling match, and that's what they did, and they did it very well. But again, it's another gimmick match in a 45-minute show.
And it's like way too short. You know, it's a world title match. Yeah. It should be... You know, this should be a massive big deal. You know, this is, you know, this is a cup final, and it went for, I don't know, 10 minutes if that. And I felt it lacked gravitas. You know, I think it, like you say, it was perfectly fine. There was, you know, there wasn't an awful lot wrong with it. I think what was wrong with it again is sort of storytelling. You know, Alex Shane said that the Rampage's pile driver is banned in World of Sport.
Yeah.
When did that happen? I don't know that it's banned in words. Like, why is it banned? Like, it's such a throwaway line.
It's a classic.
What happens if he uses it?
It's a classics Alex Shane trope. If you look back to old FWA stuff, they banned the pile driver there just to give. And it's the Memphis wrestling thing. You know, it's just like, yeah, if you ban the pile driver and someone uses it, there's a storyline arc for you. It's always a handy tool to have, and it's a handy tool to have in this situation. But you kind of like need a promo to start with. What you really want is someone who's famously known as a pile driver user as a finisher, like Minoru Suzuki. You're not going to get Minoru Suzuki. Well, actually, you might do. But you get Minoru Suzuki, who always finishes, famous for finishing his matches, even when he shouldn't do, with a pile driver. You get that guy and you say, you're not allowed to use your biggest move, and there's your story. There's 12 weeks of TV right there. So,
well,
yeah.
You just have Rampage come out and give someone a pile driver and injure them really badly, and then it gets banned.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's all it takes, but... Yeah, just to say it's banned. Like, I didn't know it was banned. No one at any point until now has told, why is a power driver banned? It's a, you know, it's a wrestling move, and you know, so yeah, again, it's kind of just too flippant, and you can get so much out of that, and they got nothing at all out of it. And the ending, you know, why is it bad that Rampage has won? Because he didn't cheat.
No,
you know, I know he's got like some friends at ringside who aren't nice and everything, but. You know, Alex Shane and Socal Val, kind of the way that they reacted to it was as though the world has ended, which is a really good way to react to a heel winning a title, you know, if they've cheated and if they don't deserve it. But when they were the rules and he won absolutely fair and square, I mean, why is it such a bad thing? It's not, you know, it's not yet been established why Rampage being the champion is in any way a negative for World of Sport.
Yeah, it needs to be more outlined. I think basically, I think what we're saying is, it's just too much story in too short a period of time because they're trying to tell too many things at once.
Yeah, and they're not doing justice to any of it because of that. And they're not telling any kind of coherent story because of that, because that, you know, there isn't time to tell a full story of anything. So everything is part of a story. You know, and, you know, I realise that I've said very little that's positive about the show, but you know, I just feel like, you know, I feel so strongly about this being a huge opportunity, and you know, this is an opportunity that no one has had for 30 years.
Yeah,
you know, to have wrestling on terrestrial UK TV, British wrestling, you know, their own series where they can tell stories and where they can get across their own characters and their own stars, and it just feels lazy, and like it feels like people have sat around and had a you know, a booking committee meeting or whatever happens when they were planning this show, and no one has kind of questioned stuff. No one has said, well, why, what is the reason we're doing this?
Yeah,
you know, it's just a case of we'll have this match and then it can end like that, and you know, because that's what happens in WWE, and then the commentators can react like that because that's how they react in WWE, and you know, it doesn't feel like that question of why is being asked, you know, like, and I think that they would have benefited massively from being asked why they were doing what they were doing, rather than just sort of sleepwalking their way through the booking of it. And again, the in-ring was fine, and you know, as it was throughout the show, you know, the wrestling itself was perfectly good and at times very good, but really let down by the framework around it.
I think that's the thing. I think like. when the bunch of the guys that were on the last show were signed to WWE, like Zapp Gibson and Ligero and those guys, they didn't lose anything because you can go and pick another 20 guys and girls.
Absolutely.
And get the same effect. You know, there are loads of women I'd like to have seen on the show. There's loads of men I'd like to see on the show. We'll get to the women thing in a minute. But there's loads more people that are going to be a good fit for this show. The one thing it hasn't got yet is a house style. Like, you watch Ring of Honor, you know what you're going to get. You watch New Japan, yeah. You know what you're going to get. You watch this, and you kind of got a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of the other, and it needs to have an overarching kind of thing to nip it all together. I think that's what they're missing.
And I have to say, none of it is better than what you see elsewhere. You know, it reminds me of TNA throughout a lot of its existence in that regard. You know, but it's that they're doing perfectly good stuff, but there is better tag team wrestling out of it than the tag team match we saw. You know, there's better multiple man matches out there. You know, everything that I saw in the show, I see elsewhere, and I can find it better somewhere. And I just think like that there is no reason that certain aspects of the show cannot be better than anything else in the world. You know, you're not going to have a show that blows everything else away in every single category, but just certain aspects, even down to, you know, something like attention to detail, you know, or something like just having that real sort of strong standard of storytelling that you're holding yourselves to, where everything completely makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain areas where this could be the best show in the world, and it isn't in any area, you know. And I think that when we talk about the wrestling itself, that's another example where, you know, not only does it not have its own style, but everything it does feels like a kind of an imitation of something that's being done somewhere else better.
That's not to say that it can't find its own style.
No.
You know, as well, I mean, it's like you look at the successful companies in the UK. Like Progress, ICW, RevPro, they're the big three, right? But they all have confirmed rosters who've all worked together for 3 or 4 years, so you get that house style. It's built in. Whereas this is a roster that's been put together in for 3 days, and it's difficult to get that feeling, that momentum moving forward. You know, they've got all the support in the world, but there is still, you know, you still got to have guys, there's some guys from certain promotions who haven't worked with other people yet, because, you know, just little bits and pieces that... What makes someone like Progress successful is the way that they've all worked together as a unit, whereas this isn't together long enough yet to be able to create that kind of feel, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely fair. Yeah, and it is something that's very difficult to achieve over the course of 3 days.
Yeah, so if we move on to the second show, which opened with Rampage Brown defeating Joe Hendry in the WS Championship, which again is like, you know, WS Championship should be a main event. You could have built a bit more to this, but having said that, the match was perfectly serviceable for what it was. It kind of told the story a bit more, filled out Rampage being a bit of a jerk and an interference kind of led match, and it was well done, I thought. What did you think, Kevin?
I'm going to rewind a little bit. I thought the recap of the show was pretty good.
Okay, sorry.
But there was one thing at the beginning where Alex Shane has just told us there's going to be a three-way women's title match on the show.
Yeah.
Literally, he's just told us that at the beginning of the show. Then Stu Bennett stands up and makes the announcement that there's going to be a three-way women's world title match on the show. And Alex Shane, in the background, looks shocked. And he's clapping his hands like, oh, this is amazing. How did you come up with that? And that is a maddening lack of attention to detail. You know,
I found that, to do the voiceover.
Shoddy and like totally amateurish. And, you know, the reason that it was able to happen, we know, is because this is all taped and he's doing this intro, you know, after it's all in the can. But to have that take place, you know, under the pretext that it's live, you know, because that's kind of how you're not supposed to think this was all taped over 3 days. You know, to tell you what's going to happen and then react with shock when what you've just said is going to happen is revealed, I just thought was really amateurish and a massive mistake. The match itself, the match was fine, but WWE light again. You know, the champion comes out to do a championship celebration, just like we do in WWE. He gets interrupted by the guy who, to this point, I would say sort of seems like a bit of a one-note gimmick. Bennett agrees to the match. Why did Bennett agree to it? Bennett wanted Rampage was the champion. Joe Hendry was pinned last week. He lost the match. Why does he get a match just because he walks out and interrupts a promo? You know, it's those usual tropes that I just think, those lazy bad habits that have been developed that World of Sport could completely not follow. You know, it's just content. It's there's no journey, there's no story. It's just something happens, someone else comes out, they have a match. You know, but the match was fine. It's just the context that I feel is completely all over the place.
It is Pro Wrestling Greatest Hits, isn't it? That's the thing. Because the next match is exactly Pro Wrestling Greatest Hits. It's a four-way ladder match, which is fine. And I really like Lionheart a lot. And I love Gabriel Kidd. And Liam Slater, who I hadn't seen before, was really, really cool. And Robbie X, who I'm a big fan of, was fantastic. I don't understand why Robbie X is in a mask, but he's in a mask. He's from Lincoln.
they all seem much lesser stars when they're all just in the ring for the intros. You know, I think a big thing that, you know, and I think we've spoken about this before, is make a big deal of like ring entrances, make it, you know, that building that anticipation, and it just gets across the charisma, and it gets across a little bit of the personalities and the characters involved, and just having them all stood in the ring just makes them seem like jobbers.
Yeah, I mean, and as well, I mean, kind of like, I know they haven't got a lot of time as well, but there's four guys here could have had two really good matches. You could have put people over a lot easier and a lot better than the ladder match. I mean, ladder match is fireworks wrestling. It's, you know, then there's nothing wrong with it. You know, if that's what you're going to do with this, which is kind of like, I can see the theme you're going for. Pro Wrestling Greatest Hits, try and grab people's attention because you haven't got long to showcase this stuff. And I think that's fine, but it's got to settle down to a storyline sooner or later. It's got to have something more to get your teeth into, or else they're not going to come back next week.
And the context surrounding this was, I thought, was just awful. And it was a really badly told story that there's something hanging above the ring, and basically it's an opportunity of something. And so Gabriel wins the match, and then he's interviewed, and he's sort of saying it like he's really happy because he's won this contract. So I kind of thought, oh, right, so the thing that Stu Bennett had put in the briefcase that they were supposed to win was a contract. So now that he's won, he now can be a member of the roster. But then they say he's got an opportunity next week. So is it just that he's won a contract, or has he won an opportunity next week? And, you know, it's kind of like, it feels like they don't actually know what direction they're going in. Obviously they do. They must have booked this out ahead of time. So, you know, why aren't they being really clear? What, you know, I can understand if it's a mystery, I can sort of understand that. But if you're going to make it a mystery, then follow through with the mystery element of it. Yeah. You know, where people really want to know what is it that he's won. But it was just really weirdly dumb, where it felt like, for a second, it felt like, right, so it's a contract. And then the next thing was that they were still following the same line about the fact that he's won an opportunity. You know, it's the same complaints. You know, I've complained about ladder matches before. You know, I think I can understand why you'd have a ladder match, especially on one of the early shows. I can understand why you do it. I just think you need that context, and preferably you want it to be a match where people care who wins. And why should anyone care which of these four blokes introduced in the ring before the match wins this match when they don't even know what they're fighting for?
Yeah, that's the thing. it's tricky, to say the least.
And I'm just, you know, I'm just complaining about the whole show the whole way through. But you know, I just see so many really obvious flaws, you know, and I feel like, you know, this is, I feel like I should say this. I feel like I should be public and upfront about this. I don't know what influence Alex Shane has in the production of this show, but
quite high,
I looked at the credits and it doesn't seem he's kind of I presume he's got a big role in the production side of it, but looking at the credits, it wasn't reflective. But I did contact Alex Shane. You know, we both have an existing relationship of sorts with Alex Shane. You know, not a particularly close one, but we've both dealt with him.
We both worked for him at some point. Yes.
He's always been perfectly friendly and polite to me whenever I've had any kind of interaction with him. And I emailed him a suggestion, basically a really big, massive, long PDF document that I wrote about this was when the first series was coming, and then it didn't happen, or, you know, when it was originally coming a year or so ago. I wrote to him and I sent him this document. It was about 8 pages long, you know, a thoroughly enjoyable read with a, you know, a cup of tea and a digestive biscuit.
You'll send it to me, I'll look, yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair to Alex, he was very gracious about it and you know, kind of responded, and then it just never really went anywhere, you know. But the point I'm making by saying this, first of all, you know, basically, like, I want to be upfront about that, because if you've decided that I'm, you know, maybe kind of bitter for some reason, then you know, that might fuel your that sentiment. But I kind of I don't want to be sort of hiding the fact that I did, you know, I wasn't asking for any money. I was literally just saying, here's a document that, you know, maybe people involved in the production could read, and this might help them with some ideas. And, you know, who the hell am I? But, you know, I made the point of saying that and pretending to be self-deprecating and all of that sort of stuff. But also I wanted to bring attention to it, just to sort of say that it's not like they haven't had outside, you know, opinions coming from outside the bubble that they're working in. You know, it's not like nobody has ever said to anyone high up on that show, here are some things you could possibly do or consider, and here are some tropes that for these specific reasons I'm giving you, you could possibly try to avoid, you know. And I suppose it's kind of like I feel like I'm in a confession box, you know, speaking to
well, I'm Catholic.
Father Truepenny. But I feel like it's probably quite important to be upfront and honest about that, and just to kind of say that, you know, I did offer whatever my services, whatever you think of my services, I did kind of offer advice, and it's entirely up to them, you know, if they decide to take my advice or not, and I don't want any reward and I don't want any stardom from it, but I did offer it, and I am aware that at least one person involved in that show read it.
There you go.
Unless he just deleted the email.
I'm sure he didn't. Alex is a fine, upstanding
No, I reckon he read it. I got faith in him.
Yeah, he would have done, definitely. I did actually say this week that Alex has had a bad, on Twitter, I did actually say that Alex has had a good couple of weeks, and I'd like to thank him for founding WrestleTalk and giving us jobs, you know, and some of us gone on to different things within the wrestling industry, me included. So, you know, without him, I wouldn't have had any kind of like notoriety for what I do. So this show would not exist, and my job with Total Wrestling and my job with FSM wouldn't exist. So I did thank him for it. And, you know, I think his work in this and the pressure that he's put into this, I mean, not just through this, through the British Wrestling Roundup as well, and obviously through WrestleTalk, has lifted the standard of British wrestling. I know there are companies that have had no relationship whatsoever, like Progress, for example, didn't really have any relationship with WrestleTalk whatsoever, but we all exposed it in our shows. They, you know, there was an expectation from that company that as wrestling journalists, we all enjoyed that company. So, you know, we've tried to boost that company. But without these platforms that Alex has created, then we don't exist. You know, the standard of wrestling critique in this country is very high because of Alex Jane, to be honest with you, and other companies as well. But, you know, we've all kind of like had these platforms that a lot of people didn't have. And I do thank him for it. And I'm not being, when I'm criticizing the show, I did genuinely like the show, but there is things here that we probably would see as things that could improve.
And I didn't like the show, but I absolutely want Alex Shane to succeed and wish him absolutely all the best. You know, my hope is that World of Sport succeeds. You know, my interfering PDF file was done entirely to try to help it succeed, and you know, whether I was right or wrong, maybe I was wrong to think that my ideas would help it to succeed, but you know, I completely want it to succeed, and I want, you know, I want Alex Shane to be successful with his venture. You know, like it's not like they didn't want my ideas, so they can, you know, I hope it all goes wrong.
I mean, well, the next match must have been a bit more your speed. Nathan Cruz and Adam Maxted defeating Doug Williams and HD Drake in a very, very good tag team wrestling match. It was about as Memphis as you could possibly imagine, so I'm guessing you enjoyed this.
I really liked this match. Yeah, I thought this was really good, really solid booking. You know, again, could have benefited from a little bit more of, you know, this is what's at stake. Here's some tournament, you know, some information on the tournament.
Yeah,
you know, and this is who else is in the tournament, and this is what these teams want to achieve. But yeah, you know, four solid wrestlers, and you know, I mean, you know, Doug Williams is has been around for a long, long time and is a very good wrestler. And you know, Cruz has been around for a long time and is a very good wrestler. You know, I would say I slightly preferred the tag match in the first episode, but I thought this was the best match of the second episode. You know, I think the tag team situation is something that they could that could be potentially could still be a big success for them. I just wanted to make more of it.
I think I don't understand why Nathan Cruz hasn't been signed by somebody. Really don't. He's just so good. It's just perfect babyface, perfect heel. Can do anything you want him to do. He's the right size. He's got the right body shape. He's just good at what he does, and
extremely, you know, experienced, isn't he?
Without being old.
You know, I need to clarify. I did say that they were all good wrestlers. The Love Island bloke in this?
Yeah, that was Adam Maxted. And who's not a slow coach by any stretch of the imagination, and has all the character. And you know, he's not the best technical wrestler in the world, but he doesn't need to be, does he? He's got charisma, and he's got.
But he's fine, and I can also completely understand why they would want someone from Love Island on their roster.
And a brilliant idea to match him up with Nathan Cruz, because that's the best tag team partner he could possibly have. He will learn so much from him. But yeah.
Yeah, so I think, no problems at all with this match. I thought, you know, it just suffers from everything around it. The match itself was good, and the tag team, you know, but both tag team matches have been good. And, you know, it could be a really good tag team tournament, but, you know, bloody, you know, shout from the rooftops about this tag team tournament.
Yeah.
Don't give us the occasional graphic of like, little shadowy men,
Oh, HD Drake. We should mention HD Drake. That's unfair not to mention him. He was very good too.
Yes, yeah, we were a bit harsh there, weren't we, talking about the other three?
Yeah,
but no, yeah, he was. Yeah.
Okay, the main event of the second show featured a three-way match for the brand new World of Sport Women's Championship. Now, back in the day, there was no women's wrestling on World of Sport. There was women's wrestling on British television, because when wrestling was taken up as a Reslo in Wales on S4C, there were lots of British women wrestlers on there. Klondike Kate was on there, and quite a few other people. But actually, on World of Sport, there was no women's wrestling. That is because Max Crabtree was a sexist, and very vocally a sexist. He said that when the British Boxing Board of Control give women boxing licenses, I will give them the opportunity to wrestle. He'd retired before the BBFC did that. Sorry, the BB British Board of Boxing Control did that. Get the right number of B's in there in the end. So he didn't like women's wrestling, so it didn't happen. And there was a lot of negativity towards women's wrestling. Now, in this match, arguably, you've got the three biggest wrestling stars in the entire promotion, but they only get one match. That's the bit that worried me about this. It was a very good match, don't get me wrong. But Kaylee Ray has been a mainstay of the British wrestling industry. She has had spent time in Japan. She was in last year's Mae Young Classic. She has worked for Impact Wrestling. She's a massive wrestling star. Bea Priestley, not quite so much. She's a star on the rise, but again, she's had a lot of exposure. She's been to Stardom in Japan. She's wrestled all over the UK scene. Big name in Progress Wrestling. And though the greener of the three is growing very, very quickly, I interviewed her for Total Wrestling early last year, and I was very impressed with her. And of course, there's Viper, who again was in last year's Mae Young Classic, is the current SWA World Champion in Stardom, is a main eventer in Stardom. So these three, probably the biggest three names currently in the world wrestling industry on this particular show, and that's why I was a little bit narked that they only got one match. Now, I am a women's wrestling writer, and people will accuse me of being a little bit myopic towards that, because I'd rather watch women's wrestling than anything else. However, yeah, it still strikes me as there are plenty of women in this country you could have made this a bit more of an interesting tournament with, had at least two matches, a semi-final and a final. And again, it suffers from that multi-person match. Not that there was anything wrong with what these guys did. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's massively important that women are on this show, because girls are wrestling fans too, and women are wrestling fans too, and you've got to have as many characters you can who are relatable to that audience. What did you think of it, Gavin?
I completely agree about just, you know, not getting enough out of it. You know, I think if you've decided that these are your three female members of your roster that you really want to showcase, they are a good pick. They're a good trio to pick as your three main female stars, but showcase them for four or five weeks first. You know, build to a title match where it's one on one. and the other one is then ready as the next challenger champion. You know, they can all be big stars rather than having, yeah, you know, because you're basically jobbing two of them out in their first appearance. You know, and you know, you could say the one that doesn't get pinned isn't really being jobbed out, but you know, I just feel like you want to build these people up as stars and help people get to know them, you know, before you've got a champion, you know, you've seen them lose. And it was a perfectly fine match. I think it suffered from being a three-way match. I think it would have been better if it was one-on-one, you know, any combination of the three in a one-on-one match, I think would have been a better match. But yeah, it was a wasted opportunity. And this is something that has been an issue with women's wrestling in the last couple of years. I think quite a patronizing presentation in some ways, you know, the Bennett on commentary sort of saying over and over again about how the women are just as tough as the men and they try just as hard as the men. You know, I don't think that particularly helps when he's just been established as the heel, you know. I think that he's not the one who should be saying that. Yeah. But I sort of feel like I would rather see actual character development and you know, heel female wrestlers and commentators not liking some of the wrestlers because they cheat because of their attitude or whatever, you know, and then baby faces who are honourable and are likable. You know, I just think that there was, it followed that kind of WWE, I think, slightly trite formula of, look at this, we're giving women a chance, aren't we good? You know, and it doesn't need that because they all look like credible athletes in the ring. You know, there was no reason to question why they're all women wrestling. You know, it almost answered a question that wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, having said that, they gave them the main event. So, you know,
and that was a good thing because at least, you know, if you're going to put your top three female stars in one match, yeah, at least it's the main event rather than if it had been the opener, that would have sent a very strong message. But you know, I mean, at this point, you know, two episodes in, that no one has really sort of jumped out in front of anyone else as being the biggest star or even kind of the biggest division. You know, on the show, there is still a chance that the women could be the big stars on the whole show. You know, and I don't know what happens in the rest of the series, but you know, certainly having them in the main event, it didn't define them down as being a sort of mid-card act. You know, but there's the potential that they could be treated in a main event way, the same way as Grado and Rampage and others.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really important. I mean, I did say on Twitter last week, the one phrase I want to get rid of from the wrestling lexicon is, I can't remember what I said now, but basically what I was saying was you get a lot of, and she's one of the best wrestlers of the world despite being female, or if she's even better than the men. It's like, no, women's wrestlers have been better than male wrestlers since the mid-1980s. They always have, because you've had people like Jagger Yokota and Manami Toyota, Aja Kong, and I could go on and generally do. But they are a much more watchable, better in-ring product and always have been. So let's move on from that. Let's just say...
And you don't get... when you're watching the Olympics, when you're watching the women's 100 metres, they don't say, these women are just as fast as the men.
No, because they're not. Because they are. And there's nothing wrong with that. And you like talk to the sprinters at the European Games this week and said, well, you didn't run as fast as the blokes did you? They're going to go like, well, no, because we're not. But it's not the same. It's a different thing.
but it's not being, you know, they don't feel the need to almost be apologetic for featuring female athletes, you know, in the Olympics or, you know, in other sports, you know, in tennis, you know, where women are big stars as much as men are, you know, there is that sort of, it can come across as slightly apologetic if you spend the whole time saying, you know, that these women they've tried just as hard as the men and they're just as tough as the men. Yeah. And, you know, kind of, it doesn't really, I don't feel it fits a kind of a sporting narrative.
No.
You know, it's just tell the story that they're fighting in the women's division to be the women's champion.
Yeah, you know, it's the Serena Williams thing, isn't it? You know, she's like the most dominant tennis player of the century. Of course, she's probably technically better than most of the guys. In fact, probably all of the guys. But it is just like, it's a different thing, you know? You can compare them if you want to, but you're not going to say, well, she's just as good as like the guys are, because she's just brilliant at what she does. So it's the same thing. Kaylee Ray is a brilliant professional wrestler. So is Viper and so is Bea Priestley. You know, and Kaylee Ray still in my running for my match of the year with Meiko Satomura at Wrestle Queendom. I keep mentioning that, but it's true. It's still the best wrestling match I've seen live ever. So, anywho.
See, I'm so outside, out of the loop. I didn't even know there was a Wrestle Queendom.
You didn't know?
I like the name of that. I think that's good.
It was Pro Wrestling Eve did the York Hall sellout. So,
okay, I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, they did the York Hall as a sellout, which was just insane. It was like, and it wasn't all wrestling fans either. It was it was like the smart command, like your Twitter friends were there, but not
mine.
No, well, mine. But you know, you know, you've been to shows where there's a bunch of people off your Twitter feed there, right? But it's like,
yeah, I think that's kind of something that's a modern wrestling thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's a very small community of 2 million people.
It was a bit like that, but there's loads of fans of Pro Wrestling Eve who are not wrestling fans because they found a way of connecting with an audience that isn't a traditional wrestling audience. I mean, they have their hardcore fans. I remember the first Eve show. I went to see Meiko Satomura's first Eve match last year. The entire front row was wrestling journalists. The second row was wrestling journalists. I was sat behind Strieger from MLW with a couple of other wrestling journalists on either side of me. On the side of him. And there was a lady who had not watched wrestling before and brought a notebook with her to write down the names of the wrestlers so she could go and research them. Which is what you want. And that's what this show should be like.
She was engaged.
She was engaged, yeah. She wanted to know more about the stuff that was going on in the ring. And if Pro Wrestling Eve can do it, that's what World Sport need to be doing as well. And I don't think they've done a bad job of it. I think they've kind of fit into the ITV scheme of things, what ITV want from a wrestling show. But like you said, there's logic is the king kind of thing that needs to kick in a little bit more. It's a short attention span wrestling show. There's nothing wrong with what they've done. I don't think it's particularly awful, but there are things they could tweak to make it better. The only other real major thing I have about the production is crash, zoom, cut, 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 crash, zoom, cut, cut, cut. They could just slow down. There's a reason why wrestling shows have a hard cam. Use it.
Yeah, I think I think it detracts from a show when you're... You know, there were too many spots where it sort of felt like a thing happened and then it felt like it suddenly jumped to a few seconds later.
Yeah.
And that didn't help it at all. It just seems a bit too post-produced, you know. It feels like something that isn't happening there in front of your eyes. And I don't think that particularly helps.
I mean, as well, it can look wrong. It's like the New Japan guys are probably the best people in the world at shooting a wrestling match because they're not like WWE. The wrestling match happens and they shoot it. No one works to the hard camera, right? So you get things like, I remember watching Tiger Mask went from the top rope to the floor and they cut at just the wrong time. So it looked like Tiger Mask had fallen out the sky. So it's like watching that all the time with it. It's just like the cameras are not in a traditional wrestling kind of environment, which can be good. I mean, like Lucha Underground are really good at not doing wrestling in a traditional way. There's a British company called Riptide from Brighton. They're really, really good at not thinking about wrestling in a traditional way. But it's kind of falling between two stools. It's not quite traditional enough to give you a center to make sure you're stabilized on it, but it's a bit too cut heavy to make it stick, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I certainly would, you know, I think that having different camera angles to WWE is a good thing. You know, I think any way that they can differentiate themselves from WWE is good. But yeah, the overcutting, you know, and Impact has done that a lot of times, and you know, it comes across a bit shoddy, and it detracts a bit because it interrupts your concentration on the match, you know, because it is very noticeable when it's done in that way.
Okay, then, to finish the show off, you have to say three positive things about World of Sport Wrestling.
Three positive things about World of Sport. Okay, can I have the fact that it's an amazing positive, but it's on ITV on Saturday tea times?
There you
I
go, mean, there's one. There's your one.
That in itself is an amazing thing. It's a huge opportunity. And it shows that there is a desire to kind of make something of it, you know, that it's not being given like there's a postman at my door.
Oh dear.
Do you mind?
No, go.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's fine. That's okay.
It gives me time to think up two other things. Can you believe it wasn't even for me?
Oh.
Bloody parcel for next door.
Oh, dear.
I feel robbed. Not that I ordered anything. You never know, do you? When a parcel turns up. Look, he's taking a photo. I can see him taking a photo of my front door now.
Oh.
So he can share it with next door to show them where he left it.
Yeah.
I feel violated. Right, two more good things about World of Sport. I think the production values were really good, and there's that danger if the production values aren't of a good enough quality, people can be turned away straight away, because they sort of think that what they're looking at is a bit, a bit minor league and inferior to, to the wrestling that they've seen in the past. But I think the production values were really top quality, and that they could carry on with those production values and have a very, very successful show. They don't detract at all from the show.
Mm.
I think they were great. The third thing I would say is just the quality of wrestling. That there are lots of really good, not only really good in-ring competitors, but rounded characters. All over the British wrestling scene, there are lots of good wrestlers with established characters. They've spent years and years establishing those characters, not on TV, and now they've been given this platform, and they're completely ready for the opportunity. They don't need to be trained how to do this stuff, because they know exactly what they're doing. They are masters of their craft, and so as far as the talent they have available to them, again, that will not be in any way a detriment to their success. If they don't succeed, it will not be because of the production values or the roster.
No. Okay, then. Well, thank you very much, Gavin, for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I hope I've left everyone with a big smile on their face, the way I've brought to their lives.
Mr. Audio Sunshine, Gavin Duenas, ladies and gentlemen. We can find him at Gavin Duenas still on Twitter.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, the imaginative at Gavin Duenas. Or as the policeman just called me, Dunas.
Dunas. Well,
I didn't correct him.
Fair enough. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at The Troopany Show, and on Patreon, where you can keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Thank you very much for joining us. Back next week, we'll have the G1 Climax final coverage. If everyone's fit enough, it should be all right. We'll speak to you then. Take care. Bye.